Have you had your soup today?
And the cold, crisp taste of Coke is so satisfying, it keeps me from eating something else that might really add those pounds.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome to our episode of Sheologians. We are here today to put the her in trilogy.
I see.
Of course
I see.
Of course we are.
Okay.
My name is Summer Yeager. I'm here with my beautiful co-host, Joy. And I have this little funny story that this is one of those things that just like happens accidentally, but it becomes like a canon event, you know?
Okay.
So a couple days ago, you know this, but we host what our church calls a reach group, which is like a community group or a parish group, whatever. It's like a midweek gathering. I don't know what your church calls it, but whatever. So it was like the bottom of the ninth, and I was not prepared and I was exhausted, and we don't do like a full meal, but people will bring snacks, and I like to provide, okay, you know, something to munch on. You know, food fuels fellowship very often.
Yes.
So I didn't want to have nothing, but I also physically, emotionally, fridgely had nothing except for some frozen pizzas. So I threw some frozen pizzas in, and then I used my pizza cutter to like cut up little squares, and I put them all on like toothpicks, like little pizza bites, and I set them out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, this is tragically bad. Like this is awful, and I'm so sorry in advance. But what happened was every single person that walked through the door and laid their eyes on the little pizza bites on toothpicks was like, is that pizza on a toothpick? Like excited, like going for it. I had like little kids running around the house with 8 toothpicks, just like,
yeah,
having the time of their lives. And it was such a surprise appreciation for pizza on a stick that don't tell any of them. But what I'm gonna do is I was so inspired that I went and on Amazon and found like really fun toothpicks. Like,
ooh,
and funny toothpicks. The swords, some of them have flowers on the end.
Ooh, nice.
I'm gonna start cooking main dishes, but like chopping it up and putting it on funny toothpicks, because my people love it. They love, if you put food on a toothpick, it just becomes,
yeah,
it's like transformative.
Yeah.
I was embarrassed. I was like, oh, I felt so bad. But it just, the surprise and delight was, listen, that's something I can do. I can cook something and put it on a toothpick. Like, and now I'm just running with it. Like, I'm going to sprint with this. And
yeah, I'm imagining like orange chicken on a toothpick.
You can do so many things.
I mean, yeah, anything.
I'm going to start putting sourdough on toothpicks. Like, I'm just going to go. I'm going for it.
It just becomes an hors d'oeuvre automatically. Yeah,
if you put it on a stick.
I do also think that, when you are participating in faithful fellowship and like facilitating faithful fellowship by opening up your home and stuff, I think that things just have a way of working out.
Yeah.
Like you just end up having, yeah, enough food. You end up using the toothpicks, and everyone is like, wow, I actually love eating pizza
off of a toothpick. Yes. I mean,
just one of those things.
I'm still thinking about it because I'm just like, wow, like it really doesn't have to be complicated. But also, I think it's just that my church is full of fun people who just tend to be in a good mood about things anyway. So,
yeah. Yeah.
But I was dying. It was hilarious. I'm, you know, every mom I'm talking to is being handed toothpicks as their kids go back for more pizza bites. And we were all just laughing about it. So I'll let you know if I come. I'm going to be continually on the hunt for fun, weird toothpicks.
Yeah. Can I put that on a toothpick?
Then, let's see. Then I
we'll
can
have
serve
to have
it.
A segment. You'll have to have a segment.
Yeah.
Can you put this on a toothpick?
Does this go on a toothpick?
Summer's going to let like you it? Know.
I will.
Well, and I just love how you can call it like a bite after that. It's not pizza. It's a pizza bite.
So true. I didn't serve pizza. I served pizza bite.
Mm-mm. Did and not. Bites only.
They were gone before we even cracked our Bibles open. So I'm going to need a bigger tray. I was not expecting... just was not expecting it. So anyway, that's my hot tip for you guys for the week is what can you put on a toothpick, and don't underestimate how much people might enjoy it.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway,
just digging in the fridge.
Yeah.
Find something. And just trust
it.
That
Dab
God
it.
Will make it pleasant and fun to eat.
Put on a cute tray. You're good to go.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. Agreed. You guys can leave us a voicemail at 470-465-0475. And this week we're starting another book club pick. So this whole episode is going to be a book club pitch in a way.
Yeah. Yep. Which actually I didn't even really think about it, but it does make much more sense that we would release this episode today as opposed to
like next week or something. Yeah. We're going to be reading Rosaria Butterfield's Five Lies of Our Anti-Christian Age. So you are invited to join us. If you don't join us, you should still read the book. We highly recommend it. I think this is one of the first times we'll both be going in. No, it's the second time we'll be going into a book club having already read the book. So I can already tell you that it's fantastic and you should read it.
Yeah. This isn't just a book club book. This is we absolutely recommend this book. One of the most important books written in the last five years for sure.
Yeah.
And just very easy to understand. We definitely would tell you to get a copy regardless of whether you'll be joining us for book club. I guess, we're not doing this episode isn't really just to tell you to do this round of book club with us, though we are saying that. You did just hear us say that. But I had recommended we do an episode about book club because we never have. Mm-mm. But book club is such a part of Sheologians. It's such a part of Sheologians. It is like we do a book club every week and we record an episode every week and we release an episode every week. It is really, it's a part of our triad. And yet some people still apparently don't even know how to join book club.
I know. Bless. You know, so what you do is you go to patreon.com/sheologians. And when you sign up there, you get access to all of our past, present, future book clubs. And then what we do is on Wednesday afternoons Joy and I get live. We go live there, and all the other people that are able to join live go live there, and they chat and we chat and we talk about the reading for the week. And if you can't go live, that's okay, because we record this and post it for our people who cannot join us live. So hopefully that answers your questions if you have any. But I liked your idea for talking about the Space Trilogy, and let's call it the Ransom Trilogy out of respect for C.S. Lewis.
Yeah.
But because while we read three books, it's a trilogy, and we took from September to February to do it. So we took our time. Although, I mean, it wasn't a short amount of reading. It was three books. And
we read, I don't know if you finished Deeper Heaven, but
yes,
we also read Deeper Heaven, which was the companion guide. So but in a way it's like, I don't know, if you think about how long it would take you potentially to read a whole trilogy.
Yeah. No, it was a reasonable amount of time.
That's especially, we had Christmas and so we took a little time off, but I don't know. That's a big part. That's a big part of what, like, before we even get to the Ransom Trilogy, a big part of why we love book club is just the reading of books altogether and having the accountability. And certainly Summer and I have a little more responsibility to do the reading every week because we're
leading
the
discussion. Yes.
But there's so many ladies that don't miss. They don't miss the weekly
That's
reading.
Right.
Some of them don't miss book club itself.
Yeah.
A book. They've been here as long as we've been doing this, and every once in a while, but people still, like, people, they'll have something going on and they won't be in book club. And Summer and I are like, and so it is it's just, there's so much that I love about book club, the accountability. And I think it felt a little, there's been a few books where it's felt different to be in there with all the ladies that do book club. Obviously we had our Fair Sunshine era. That was a big one. Well, and we've read so many good books. I don't think we've ever read a bad book. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. We're A plus.
Yes.
Now, maybe not.
Why? Zoom just gave her a thumbs down bubble popping up over her head, which was a really special
haters moment. Haters. But yeah, book club is like, when we finished this Ransom Trilogy, I felt like we were all like leaving summer camp.
Yeah, we'd gone through a thing together.
Yeah, and you can insert your commentary about why summer camp is
lame.
Morally horrible. We weren't really at a camp. Everyone, I'm just imagining, as soon as I said it, it's like,
I hate summer camp.
Everyone piping in and is like, this is why summer camp is morally reprehensible.
Yes.
And how dare you?
Yes.
But yeah, we really, I don't know, we really do something special over there in book club. I like to think we're doing something valuable and special here in these episodes, but book club is just quite a thing. And I just feel like the Ransom Trilogy made it into more of a thing. And it's, I don't know, it's just different. We get to, it gets shaped and molded and changes, and we get to do it with other ladies.
Yeah.
Whereas this is just us. So we don't,
right.
We know how, I mean, Sheologians is vital to my own growth and personal sanctification and all of that. But it's just kind of fun to experience it with more than just
a group.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think too, this was something I didn't understand before I started doing book club. I'd never been a part of one. And so I didn't understand, like, what's the point of a book club? And over time, it's shifted and changed. I mean, I started doing it when you had Georgia. And so I wasn't even living in Arizona. Things have changed. But I think there was like a really pivotal moment for me. I think I've talked about it in book club before, but this is what I think of when I think of like, why is doing something like this valuable or worth it for me? And it makes so much sense that when you are reading the same material as a group of people, that you get something out of reading that material that you wouldn't otherwise. And we know this intuitively, right? We do this in school, right? You read books at, with a class, you had an instructor, you probably got something out of it that you wouldn't have if it was just you in your room. But I also just think about, now I'm not even remotely comparing anything that we've read in book club to scripture. But when I think about like reading scripture and how so many people do have this idea of reading the Bible as something you just do like in your private prayer closet, like it's just you, they're missing out on a lot. And that is not the way that even scripture talks about reading scripture, right? So Deuteronomy tells us that the words of the Lord are something that we should be talking about with each other when we're walking on the way, when we're sitting, like wherever we go. Scripture should be something that is just a part of what we're constantly talking about. And when you go to church on Sundays, you're hearing scripture exposited, hopefully, and you're having them explained to you. And, we were meant to understand the scriptures in the context of our local body. And I think about like just how much I love in our a throwback to our small group, we're just reading the Bible together. And we're not doing a, oh, what did you get out of this passage type of Bible study?
Right.
We're providing accountability, but we're talking about the scripture that we read throughout the week. And it never fails every time I've sat in a group like this that I have learned something from somebody else reading the scriptures. I've
Right.
learned something from somebody else pointing something out that I didn't see. So it's because I grew up in the waters of that, it's kind of silly that I never really understood like the point of a book club. Like, other people are often smarter than you and see things that you don't, and bring a richness to something you're reading that you might have missed. So, again, I'm not at all comparing book club to going to church. So, if you hear that, you're
Right.
missing my point entirely. Just
Yeah.
my point is that there have been times in book club where, you know, I read the same chapter as everybody else, and I did not catch what someone else caught. And it just brings a layer of, it brings a layer to the reading that I wouldn't have had otherwise. So
Yeah,
anyway, to get
just
us into the
yeah.
actual topic, right? I started reading Out of the Silent Planet, which is the first book in the Ransom trilogy, and I couldn't get through it. I mean, you know, it starts interestingly enough, if and you know, I came to it thinking, oh, this is C.S. Lewis's attempt at science fiction. So what did I know? If you think that, you know nothing is the answer, unfortunately. And we'll talk about that, I'm sure. But you know, I've read science fiction before, and I honestly, my honest takeaway is that if you try to read the Ransom trilogy with the idea of this is just science fiction, you're probably going to hate it. I did not like it. And it was extremely helpful to read it in book club and to read it alongside, you know, you mentioned Deeper Heaven, which is the companion guide by Christiana Hale. that I highly recommend. If you don't like the trilogy, just read the companion guide alongside it, and it will change that dislike into like. Because what he's actually doing is telling the story of the medieval cosmos and making it modern, which is just very, very interesting. It brings a layer to the reading that I would have missed otherwise. So anyway, that's my first hot tip. If you want to make it through the trilogy, grab Deeper Heaven and help. It will help you. It will give you a map to what C.S. Lewis is actually doing.
Yes. And yeah, there's lots of the nice thing is there's lots of companions to this book. Some C.S. Lewis wrote that are nonfiction, and then some that other people wrote, or there's lots of talks. We had someone in book club that had taught on, I forget if it was the trilogy or
I
just
think it was out of the Silent
out,
Planet.
okay. And so, yeah, there's so much to know. So again, here we are touching on that point that you just made, which is companions doing something. With a companion, may make it easier when you are tired of getting through it, because they can kind of bear some of the burden, or your friend may be smarter than you and maybe like, hey, dummy, you missed the point of that. You're missing the beauty of this, and I'm
Yes.
not gonna let you do that.
Yes.
Because, yeah, Out of the Silent Planet is, I would say just knowing about the medieval cosmology helped so much. What helped us read it was not these lofty concepts, though you could go there, depending on how beginning, intermediate, and advanced you wanted to get. You could really just dig and dig and dig till you get to things that
Yeah.
you and I. Especially by the time you get to the end of the trilogy, and there, he's throwing in some like Arthurian Camelot type stuff too. So there's really just so much. C.S. Lewis was just very, very intelligent and learned in a way that most of us are not. But yeah. Out of the Silent Planet was kind of, yeah, I think I would have had a hard time making, well, so when usually when I start a book, I don't not finish it. So I would have made it through. But there were some moments where I needed someone to like hook my arm and be like, we're still going. We are still a walking. And yeah, and even some of Paralandra, I was like, and then it started to make sense. And it's sort of that I know a lot of people have we were hearing that lots of people had read That Hideous Strength independently of the others. And I don't recommend it that way. But I could see why people would do that. And I could see why. But I don't, there's something about getting to the end of Paralandra and you all of a sudden it hits you. Your friend has hooked your arm and is kind of pulling you a little bit up the mountain. And all of a sudden you kind of start to see what C.S. Lewis is doing. And it just, in a way, it gives you, well, I always have an appreciation for the establishing, maybe if you, for lack of a better word, the establishing moments in a story, which in a trilogy, that might be an entire book.
Yeah.
And that's just a part of a, that's just a part of a story. If you're telling a long story, there's gonna be moments where you're just like, why are we learning this? Why are we hearing about this? Why am I having to read this? And that's just how it goes. You're there. That's a part of the journey you're taking with Ransom. And that's, it's a part of like the transformation of who Ransom is in the third one does not literally, like in the who he is, not just your perception of who he is, but who he is in the story is not the same without the first and second. And it's the true point of what he's trying to do is encapsulated in all three. So I really can't even, I can never recommend you not read it as a trilogy. I just can't. Can we just be honest and say that Hideous Strength, the third one, is the best. It's the best one.
Yes.
But it's not the same without the first two.
No, no, it's not. And something I learned from Deeper Heaven that just is a little fun piece of trivia about the books is that, so C.S. Lewis and J.R. Tolkien were friends, mm-hmm. right? And they, in 1936, they challenged each other to essentially write, well, Lewis suggested that he write a space travel story, and while Tolkien creates a time travel story. Now, Tolkien never completed his. It was called The Lost Road, and it was supposed to link, I think this is just so interesting, Middle Earth to our world. Now, Lewis wrote the Ransom trilogy, which, so obviously he finished it. He wrote it between 38 and 45. It initially was not going to be called the Space Trilogy. And of course that has to do with, basically the entire story, which is a story of a medieval cosmology. I didn't even know before this that that Lewis was a medieval scholar. I had no clue. Did you know before mm-hmm. we, I had no,
no.
I had
no know
idea.
Nope.
But in the medieval time, the idea of space being this cold, dead place, outer space being actually full of space and was like dark and silent, was not how they viewed outer space at all. They viewed it as warm and teeming with life. And essentially, there was this idea of Earth being at the bottom of these spheres and everything under the moon essentially being separated from these spheres. That's why the first book is called Out of the Silent Planet, because mm-hmm. we literally leave, we go beyond the moon, we leave the silent planet into this place mm-hmm. that is teeming with life. And so even just having that little bit of information just changed the reading for me. Because when yeah. Ransom first leaves the planet and it's like hot and warm and all this stuff, I was just like, what is happening? Like, what is the importance of that? What is he telling us? and that the idea that each of the planets, again, this is part of the medieval cosmology, have a temperament that is essentially overseen by an angelic being that matches that temperament was just mm-hmm. an idea that I'd never even really been introduced to.
Well, and we would read it as we would hear that and interpret that as astrological and might almost be like, whoa, like mm-hmm. I have to stay away from that. Right. But that wasn't what that meant.
Right. No. No, not to the medievals at all.
No.
So anyway, I'm not really sure where you want to take it, but I do think that each of the books there's a story that he's telling that was so uncomfortable for me in parts because of the medieval cosmology. But what he was essentially saying throughout the thread of these three books is that the incarnation did something special that affected all of creation. Like that really is the story of the trilogy. And that mm-hmm. again is why if you approach it as just science fiction, you're gonna miss so yeah. much of what is happening there. So that lent a hand to me being able to finish Out of the Silent Planet and actually wanting to move on and looking forward to moving on in a way that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And then there's a moment in Paralandra, and I don't want to give it away, which was the first time I actually cried in a book since like fifth grade. Just the way that he tells this.
What was your fifth grade book,
though? Oh, Salamandastron, one of the Redwall series books.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember just reading Salamandastron. If you guys didn't read Redwall as kids, you really missed out. I have not read every Redwall book, but I've read almost every Redwall book. It's not too late.
It's not too late.
But Salamandastron, I just remember that was really a moment. But Paralandra was my next one. No, I'm just kidding. Ooh, this one's embarrassing. Harry Potter. Yeah. Yeah. When Dumbledore died.
You don't have to be embarrassed.
Okay.
I've shed many a tear over my Harry Potter books.
Okay. Yeah. No, when Dumbledore died, that was, you have to know we're old. So we read the books as they were coming out.
Yes.
Like,
yes, we did.
Everybody now pretty much knows.
Which means we're superior, just so you know. Sorry. Sorry. You don't get to pick when you're born. You don't. And they're just, but every generation has their thing that makes them superior in some ways. And the fact that the Harry Potter books like came out like sort of like aligning with our age, even. Sorry, we're just better than you.
It was definitely an experience that that we had that everyone else doesn't have anymore. So sorry, but it was great. So anyway, Paralandra was a slog for me. There were some parts of it that I just was dying. I hated it. But the climax of the story was so worth it, and it was so beautiful, and it was so well written, and it was so emotional. And what happened to me while I was reading Paralandra was just that all of the things happening it were so intentional, and it was so much about having rightly ordered loves and hatred that I found myself, even though there's no explicit line in the book that's like, hey, this book is about properly ordered loves and hatred, it's so well written that I found myself constantly thinking of, is my love, is my hatred properly ordered? And that is the mark of great fiction. That's the mark of great writing, when it is just in your daily life, because you're reading the story, forcing you to think of these things. That made it totally worth it. Totally worth it for me. And again, I think if you approach Paralandra as a piece of science fiction, you are going to be sorely disappointed.
Yeah.
I mean,
the first two books have almost no characters.
Yeah.
Almost none. And just so you know, when another character does show up, there are long philosophical conversations that you're going to have to walk through. And it's much easier with a friend, we already established. It's easier with a companion of many kinds. Get your companion. Find your travel buddy.
And it can be us too, by the way. If you join book club, you can watch all of our discussions. They're all there if you want. If it's going to help you, then great. Go get it.
Yeah. And honestly, this is not going to happen for a long time, but I even anticipate that Sheologian's book club will do the Ransom trilogy again, but it just won't happen for a long time. So sorry.
Yeah. Sorry.
But yeah, this is at the end of Paralandra for me is the moment where I realized that C.S. Lewis is telling, well, the most Christian story. Doing it in a way that is descriptive, world building, scary, intense, and not in a blasphemous way.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big thing. I think that we are so, we're so many Christian storytellers are trying to tell a story that's not blasphemous. And then I think we sort of fall into the ditch of offensive. Like, is any denomination going to be offended by this? Then we just shouldn't do it. But we focus so much on not, almost as the, like we can't, there are themes and even just characters that we cannot represent in stories without feeling like we're trying to say, we're trying to make a man, because Ransom is a man, but there, he is, his transformation is not, it's, he's a man, so he does not have the same story arc in real history as Jesus. That's not what C.S. Lewis is trying to do, but he is telling a story about Jesus. Yeah. It is a Christian story that is not, and even as I try to explain it, I feel like we just don't quite get it. We don't get it. We haven't read enough of stories like this. There's nothing blasphemous. There's nothing there. It's just, it's not that way, but it's wholly about Jesus. Mm-hmm. That was his whole intention. Dante with Christ. That's really what he's trying to do. That's an oversimplification, but that's the basic idea. Yes, it's the basic idea. And the end of Girlander for me was when I finally got it. I got that that's what he was trying to do. We weren't just reading a random story about a guy who transforms and isn't the way he is anymore, because that's the best protagonist there is, that we've all seen it a million times, but that's not the story. That's not the type of protagonist that Ransom is. But it's a little weird, and there's a lot of backstory there. Some of it you have to dig into to understand. And I think that encourages non-lazy reading, which I'm not saying you can't read anything that isn't redoing Dante. Please, there's so many good stories that are not Dante redone.
Yes.
And please read Dante too if you want. I don't think I'm going to get there soon, but I will eventually one day. But you know, I appreciated. He did it. He did what we were supposed to be, what we're supposed to be doing. Those of us that want to tell a story or are artistic in any way, he did it without being heretical and without compromising the feelings that are supposed to come in a story.
Yeah.
And that was when I was like, okay, he's doing it. I knew, and that's really what got me through Out of the Silent Planet, was like, I know he's going to do it. I know he is. I get it. He's going to do it. And yeah, towards the end of Paralandra was when, well, I think once we got past Ransom just floating around a lot on Paralandra, just so you guys know, the second book is him just floating around a lot.
A lot.
And sleeping, waking and sleeping. But even then, even that stuff, I don't know. We'll have to do another episode when we both read it again for the second time. Just be like, here's what we learned now that we've read it twice. But
well, I actually, there's an interesting, I kind of pulled people on Twitter and I was like, what did you get? Like, what did you get out of the Ransom trilogy if you've read it?
Oh, nice.
And someone said something really interesting about Paralandra that I appreciated. And I'm going to, I mean, someone named Mr. Boltitude responded to. I mean,
very
there
nice.
Are people out there.
A true fan.
Yes. There are people out there who really are deep into this. But a lot of comments were about Paralandra. Savannah said, I haven't finished it yet, but I regularly think about in Paralandra when Ransom says it feels almost vulgar to want seconds after eating such satisfying food. There are so many of these comments are so interesting. Andrew said, I often think about how the enemy in Paralandra was only interested in civil discussion when it served his interests, then behaved like a rabid dog when the Eve figure wasn't looking. There's so much in Paralandra like that. A lot of these, oh, here's another one from Paralandra, that sometimes obedience is the point and not being practical. It just, man, oh, so many. Paralandra is full of gems like that. I don't think you should skip Paralandra. Yes, there's way too much floating on lily pads. But when I looked through these responses, there was so many moments of just like, oh, here's another one. I think of Paralandra being an image of how important it is to have a root in oneself in order for true faith to flourish. So Paralandra is very deep and there's a lot there.
Yes.
And since we've only read it once, I know for a fact that there's more for me to mine there. But yeah, I am telling you guys that it's a lot of floating around and it's not always the easiest reading, but the what you walk away with is what makes it totally worth it.
Yeah. And it's, well, it's the floating that like in that, so floating versus anchored is an important concept in the story. If you haven't read it, that means nothing to you, but just trust me, it is. So C.S. Lewis doesn't do anything. You can rest assured that he's not doing anything by accident or just being like, ah, this seems like a good part of the story here. Let's just toss that in.
No.
That's not, no. He really just, Paralandra is when he really starts doing the thing and you're like, okay, I see. Mm-hmm. I see what's happening.
Yeah.
And then he just changes everything. In that Hideous Strength, all of a sudden you have 65 characters. They all live in different places. They're all in different, he's introduced, we're on Earth. And you don't, you're not even, it's like, where's Ransom? Who's Mark and Jane? Who are these people that we're talking about? He just, like we said, if you haven't read them, we had already mentioned there's a lot of people that read that Hideous Strength independently of the other two. And that's because it is a completely different book. But
yes,
it is absolutely the final part of the trilogy. That's like the only way I ever want to refer to it. It's like, oh, if you've only read the first one, or if you only read that Hideous Strength, I'm going to be like, oh, so you've only read the end.
And that Hideous Strength, I'm afraid to even start talking about because there's so much there. It was my favorite. It was the best part of the trilogy, undeniably. But again, if you walk into it expecting science fiction, there is a little bit of science fiction, but what it really is a scathing commentary on modern man. And it is so, the fact that it was finished, he finished writing it in 1945, and everything that he wrote about is still happening. It's still how the enemy works. It's still how modern man is functioning. And it's almost 100 years later, is mind blowing. But you read it and you're like, yeah, this is still going on. This is still happening. This is still how people think. This is still how people work. It was really, really, disorienting at times to go, wow, okay, so there really is nothing new under the sun. But there's also scenes in that Hideous Strength where, like, as you're reading it, you feel so on edge. It was like a horror movie and it was really well done, but none of it was ever for the purpose of being scary. It was a real, and all of it has callbacks to biblical imagery and just like layers of meaning that, again, I'm really glad I didn't read it without companions because I would have missed so much of what was happening. But it was obviously the strongest entry of the three. and I think just the most wild ride of the three. And another book that I know I'm going to have to mine more at some other point in my life.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So much, even with companions, there's just a reason why. And you know, this is the benefit, just like have a bunch of kids and then just whenever a kid gets to a certain age that you and your husband deem appropriate, just reread it.
Yeah.
Reread and I will yearly. Say too, I don't know, figure it out.
I will say too, some of you might have a 13-year-old who's ready to read it, and you might have a 13-year-old who's not. I was not ready to read it until I was 34. So maybe that I'm obviously a late bloomer here. But I know people who have said, you know, essentially that they tried to read it too young and they couldn't get into it. And then they revisited it later and were like, oh, okay. I get it. This is enjoyable. I love it. So
yes.
Just a thought, if you're feeling gung-ho about it as an adult, that's great. I think you should read it. But if you're like, I don't know if my 13-year-old can handle it, it's okay to let them let them decide. Because you don't want them to hate it.
I mean, if you, or even if you're just thinking my 13-year-old can't handle it, there's lots of other C.S. Lewis too.
Yeah.
And obviously the Chronicles of Narnia, but we're not talking about the Chronicles of Narnia,
no.
But they're great.
Yes.
And there's a great companion guide to those called Planet Narnia. But those are undeniably more written for a younger right. audience.
Right.
Or at least starting at a younger audience.
Right.
But yeah, so the amount of Lewis writing that is referenced in the companion guide, that he wrote about all the same things in
yes.
different ways, very
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
But these were the things that he was very passionate about certain things. And so if you were trying to maybe prep yourself, then if you don't know anything about C.S. Lewis, the one book I would not recommend that you read is Till We Have Faces.
Okay.
Because I read that when I was young and I just did not get it. And it was, I just remember it being very sad and kind of boring.
Okay.
And being like, this, it's amazing that something can be so boring but still elicit emotions from me. But I didn't know anything about C.S. Lewis or what, from what I've heard, that book could have its own companion guide as well. And maybe it does.
Right.
But yeah, so I think that the reason why the Ransom Trilogy is special for us and special to Book Club is because of the story itself. But also just the story in general, I guess. There is so much to this specific story, but there is also something so invigorating about getting to the end of a good story, especially a long one. 'Cause long stories are not for the faint of heart.
No.
I mean, we're just different. I'm different since I read the Ransom Trilogy, and that's how stories should be. And that might mean that you're going to have to buy another book to read alongside your book. Or, you know, I mentioned Dante. Please don't try to go buy a copy of Dante and read it. I mean, fine if you want to, but there's so much more. That book deserves more. Dante deserves more than just you being like, I'm going to read this, I'm going to get through it, I'm going to check this off the list of classic literature. But I think in a way, what I love is that C.S. Lewis modernized it for us. He made something that is that's very real feeling, the way he describes it. It is philosophical. It makes you think. It is a little weird. Love that. Love a little weird. I think maybe that's why people call it science fiction, because they're just like, we don't have a weird category other than that.
There's a spaceship in the beginning.
Now
I guess.
There's a lot of weird genres out there now.
Yeah.
I don't think the Ransom trilogy fits into those weird ones, but he told a great story that you can read and understand at face value, but that he wasn't going to write you this universal story that just anyone can understand without understanding worldview and even the Bible, or at least the story the Bible is telling. I still don't quite know how science fiction, like secular science fiction nerds, are reading this and not understanding or
no.
But I think it's not so old, which I'm not saying old equals bad, but some very important literature is old to the point where we don't understand it because it's in a different dialect. Some of it's actually been translated from other languages, and we just don't even understand those people. It's like, oh, the person who wrote this never had electricity. Bam, we're completely different people. Like, we just are. We're so different.
Yeah.
Just that one thing. We can still understand it, but it's not, he's also challenging you. He's not cutting corners to make the most legible story ever, because he still has something. He has a story he is trying to tell, and he's not going to sacrifice that just so you can mindlessly read it without looking into a thing or two. And I mean, and that's really, that should be a practice for all of us reading, is if do you see a word that you don't know what it means, look it up.
Yeah.
Do you see a concept that you don't understand?
Recognize, yeah.
Look it up. Like, it's good. This is how reading shapes us. Like, even just, it's very known that if you read, if you're a good reader, you're going to be a good speller. There are reasons why all of these things build and shape us. And there's a lot of things that I knew about in high school just because I read.
Like to read, yeah.
Yeah. Or even it's like watching older TV. You're tapping into the pop culture of a different generation. And so I'm not saying you fully understand, but you understand that culture in a different way than your own.
Yeah.
Because it's just exposure to something that's maybe not totally
familiar.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's good. That's really good. And again, it's not scary because you have companions.
That's right.
With you.
That's right. Well, if this didn't convince you guys to either join book club or read the Ransom trilogy or just read outside your comfort zone, we will never be able to convince you. If this doesn't convince you, nothing's going to. And I hope that it does. Maybe you did just need a friend to say, hey, we're gonna read this whole thing. Because it was you who, after we finished Out of the Silent Planet, or we were getting ready to, you were like, we're pushing through. We just gotta push through.
We have to. We gotta see where Ransom's going.
It didn't take a lot of convincing. I was just like, okay, you know what? You think we should go? Let's go. All right. I didn't have to be convinced, but I don't know that I would have done it. So sometimes you just need that little push. So
sometimes you just need to be drugged, kidnapped, and thrown into a spaceship, and take it to outer space.
Another planet. And then you'll become a better person. Okay, that's it. Okay. So you guys, seriously, join us this week, Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. Arizona time. Google what time that is for you, because I don't know. I barely know what time that is for me. As I was saying it, I was like, is it 1:30? I'm pretty sure it's 1:30. I've been doing 1:30 for literal years. And if you can't join us, that's okay. We'll record it. You can catch up with us later. Grab your copy of Rosaria Butterfield's Five Lies of Our Anti-Christian Age. That's going to be another journey in and of itself, a different kind, mm-hmm. but it's going to be awesome. So we'll see you in Book Club Wednesday. And if not there, we'll see you next week.
See ya.